Welcome to the Future Chia Podcast. I'm Leon Fitzpatrick.
And I'm Jos Stalla.
And we'll be talking about everything from Taoism to design to traditional Chinese medicine and everything in between.
And we talk about how to make purpose out of life and life out of purpose. Whatever that means.
Join us for our next amazing adventure into the unknown.
Yeah, all happening. Hold on. So we're back here in the nature, away from everyone. And all we'll be here are the birds. And as soon as we look around, all we'll be seeing is trees. But we can see the forest within the trees. So we got this understanding of the universe that allows us to see the tree in the forest.
Yeah.
And so, as usual, no one to pester us. There's no one here was mundane.
Yep.
And there's only kangaroos and parrots and
kookaburra.
A few other birds were sort of like, they have a very specific idea about life. And
makes a bit.
Yeah. And so in that regard, it's quite profound being here. And because it is, the only problem is I'm getting more and more detached from the physical world.
That's okay.
And every now and then when I hear from other people what happens, I'm going like, shit.
I don't think you'd want to go at the moment. You want to really go back to that. So I think it would be, you'd notice it. You'd notice feel this immediately.
It's something about being detached. And then, obviously all that stuff that happened with all the food and so what's going on there?
Well, no, it's just, it made me think of it because where we are at the moment is in this sort of hinterland or the Sunshine Coast, I think you'd call it, Queensland. This is a permaculture community, is that correct?
Yes.
So what's, permaculture is a little bit different than what we've experienced with, what do you want to call it? Monoculture, monocrop, basically, where we take swaths of land and plant just one crop, like, you know, oats or corn or whatever it might be.
Mm.
So permaculture, as I understand it, is it like regenerative agriculture, or it's basically growing things that belong with each other or grow things in naturally, as they would otherwise occur in nature. Is that right? Is that your
understanding? Yeah, it's anything. It's like it's a unified field.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not an isolated culture. It's a unified culture, and it makes the land very happy.
Yeah,
and I can feel this here.
Yeah,
it's a happy land. You really can sense that it's what we're seeing here is actually profound, because the land likes doing its own way.
Yeah.
It doesn't like interference by other people.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. No, and you can feel that when you come here, because you feel a lot of yin, a lot of, I don't know, it's like relaxing. It's very, doesn't feel hectic or wound up, or you don't feel the same fields you feel in the city. You feel very at ease and at peace when you come here.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it, I think, because it is a nature preserve, so animals that aren't fussed by people. They're very happy to, you can just walk past kangaroo, you train, and kangaroos come up to you while you're training. You've mentioned that before. But I feel like it has something to do because, like you said, a unified field where we're occupying, you're part of the land, and you're using the land, but you're not taking advantage of it. And therefore, when it comes to growing food, for example, it's not at the cost of that. So sort of a lot of industrial agriculture has become very much about processed food. So instead you take over massive parts of land, you grow one crop, you process it heavily, and then you kind of end up with like shitty food, like heavily processed sugar, processed wheat, white flour. And there's a very easy correlation to be made between the low nutritional value of food and the high processing power, which again is an industrial, you know, result of industrialization, an increase in allergies. People can't handle wheat and things when in the past you're Italy or France and you can have a loaf of bread and it's got nutritional value, it's got protein, it's got three ingredients, you know, pastas and things, where doesn't translate, because the cheaper it gets, the more processed it gets, the worse the nutritional value gets, the more we have issues with it when we get, you know, bloating and other things that are caused as a result of these impure ingredients. But what's really started to stick in my mind a bit is one thing is you've always talked about food, but not in terms of like follow this diet, because dieting is like, you know, the keto diet, the South Beach diet, the all meat diet, the this diet. It's often, diet is often seen as a fad or something that's designed to achieve quick results, you know, lose weight quickly or whatever, right? It's rarely about
health. Yeah, it's like an isolated factor rather than being unified.
Right, which I want to get to, right? Because I think it's something we mentioned last episode about the unified field of organs and they work together and how that can affect other organs and other brain functions. You know, often all TCM, Chinese medicine, Taoism is unity, not disparateness, right? We often go out of our way to isolate mental and physical, or these things are here and that's there, and that's, and in doing so, we harm ourselves and we harm the environment and nature. But what's happened a lot lately, and I want to get to a few things, is, you know, I think when we look at the environment and the climate and our impact on the earth, it's gotten very, very quickly to the point where we're doing everything wrong. So people are wrong for existing. This is where the extreme, you know, cult-like way this goes. When at once it might have been protect, you know, don't harm nature, don't pollute, which is a great, you know, message. Don't put plastic in the ocean. Don't design things that are open looped. Don't destroy ecosystems, you know, protect animals, you know, live in harmony with nature, you know, which is like regenerative agriculture, which is a thousands of year old process of allowing livestock and crops to cohabit. So grow multiple crops in one area, you know, cattle can, you know, basically defecate and have their fertilize the ground naturally. Crops grow through that. They go into the next field. They chew it down. So these things can actually work really well. There's a place called White Oak Pastures in America where they do regenerative agriculture, and they've proven that they don't need to vaccinate their livestock. They don't need to do all these heavily industrial pesticides. They don't use pesticides. And the guy he's talking about, he said, it's a risk there that, you know, something gets in and destroys some of the crops or the cattle, but they want to stick to their version of doing it. And they're in the minority of what we call like industrial agriculture in terms of the way they produce their products. But that means all their meat and all their produce there is very, very high quality. It's got no GMO, it's got no pesticides, got no, nothing. The cattle haven't been injected with anything. So there's a way to do that. And his argument is that it would require a lot of people to get on board to do that, to change that system as a whole. But a lot of them don't want to have the risk. The risk crops being devastated by parasites or crop rust. We don't want our cattle getting sick and spreading to other cattle and having them all drop dead, so we have to make sure we vaccinate them. There's lots of talk now about mRNA being used in cattle, which is another big issue. So we see these big problems, big challenges, and a lot of times it comes down to people being wrong, and therefore it's wrong to eat meat because I think industrial meat production is awful. I think we should not be doing that. There's a lot of better ways to do it, but I'm guilty of eating meat that's been processed like that, so it's a part of the system. But to say that farming is causing the planet to go to hell and it's all wrong, that we should stop and we should start eating synthesized or synthetic meat and bugs, which is the narrative of the usual suspects. We talk about them quite a bit. They're in Davos in Switzerland. They're eating their, you know, Wagyu rump steaks and discussing how the plebs, the idiots, the assholes, and all the people taking advantage of the planet, like us living, are the ones causing the problem. So we should now lower our, you know, our dietary intakes. And that essentially farming is bad. And so now you see young people going, oh yeah, farming's bad. We should get rid of that. So you've got government.
So you become an influencer instead.
That's right. Yeah. Who needs food if you've got likes on TikTok, right? So you can see people like probably wasting away. Oh, you look really skinny. Yeah, I stopped eating, you know. Look at the likes I'm getting. So that narrative quickly gets out of scale. So then government started introducing carbon taxes and saying, your farm's bad for our carbon emissions. So Ireland, they want to kill hundreds of thousands of sheep and cows because it's bad for the environment. In Amsterdam, they tried to basically tax people out of business in terms of farming. So like they were going to shut 3,000 farms down. Same thing happened in Poland and Germany. So what started happening is what happened during COVID with the trucker envoy. So now you've got farmers saying, fuck you. This is our livelihood. No farm, no food. And to have to say that in this day and age, and this comes back to our last conversation about the utter psychosis we're in, to have to convince someone that you need these things to operate for you to eat, right? You can improve these systems, absolutely. You can improve emissions in trucking and transportation. You can improve these things. But if you're saying stop it now, you're not really understanding that what that means for everything in the environment and the world. So there's this, again, need to villainize everybody to say everything we, the system we've been given, you know, the same people who gave it to us are telling us that we're wrong now, we need to change rapidly. So the protests are going ballistic. You've got farmers dumping manure on the basically the front lawn of parliament and launching sort of hay bales at police and protesting. And it's an absolutely unbelievably huge movement that's getting absolutely zero mention in the mainstream media, of course. But you've got farmers like who, if you run a farm, you're scraping by a lot of the time. There's a huge amount of mental health issues in farmlands. There's a huge amount of suicide. It's very, very difficult to make any money because you have a lot of overheads. And you do this, I think there's a lot of reasons that might go back historically about why would you want to get up in the morning, at four in the morning, and go and till the fields and milk the cows and make sure the chickens are happy. And again, I think this connects a bit to our last conversation, is that it's not a practical decision there. There's something that's driven you to be part of that. And you feel connected to the land by farming it, not by hiding and not touching it. And you know, there's arguments for protecting nature and leaving it alone. There's other discussions around how do we grow and survive and thrive as a part of the earth without taking advantage of it, but by contributing back into it. I do believe there has to be a way to do that. And there is a way to do that. And I think we were there many thousands of years ago, and I think we can get back to there as well. I see this sometimes, things have to get very bad before you realize the opposite and realize the good. But the idea that villainized.
I mean, the fact is, like, we always find a way forward, but it always changes, and the nature is transformation. So growth is transformation. It's not like getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Eventually, we blow up.
Yeah.
And so growth means transformation. So that means that the water transforms into wood, the wood into fire, the fire into earth, the earth into metal, and then it continues. And that means the five element cycle, which is a symbol of transformation, it's an infinite process.
Yeah.
And we have given everything for infinite processes. So we're here forever.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. Or, humans here forever. So planet Earth will go on for a long time.
Yeah.
But we go through different stages in order to understand more about what it's going on.
Yeah.
And we are facing a totally new evolution on the scale not seen before. And that obviously involves tech on a level never seen before.
Yeah.
And that means we will discover something that then improves what otherwise would have turned into a problem.
Yeah.
Because monoculture would have eventually... monoculture is not a happy country.
No.
You know, I mean, everything is consciousness. So, like, living here in this beautiful permaculture village, everything is just, it's nature's doing its work here.
Yeah.
So no one interferes.
Yeah.
So the humans walk around.
Yeah.
And nature is doing its work. And as a result of that is the vibration of here is very happy. So being here, just sitting here and standing is enough to be happy.
Nice for
you. Because you can feel that this land embraces itself as like, wow, no one interferes with me.
Yep.
So that's obviously the result of the hippie movement in the 60s and 70s, which was the beginning of the Aquarian Age, which was, okay, we're going to have a different way of living. And it's allowing new dimensions to come in and also new understanding. But the age of Aquarius is also the age of computers.
Mm.
Yes. And that's the age of AI. So as a result of that is because the hippies were all about to return to nature.
Yeah.
But we also need to find a way how we can actually live in a way different to how we used to live in the past, because that would have meant we had no time for self-development.
Exactly.
Yeah, meant getting, that's why farmers don't want to do it. You have to be up at 4 and you're still busy at 9 p.m.
Yeah.
So you can't just tell someone like in that work environment, look, you need 2 hours of Qigong training and meditation. They tell you to fuck off.
Yeah.
You know, get a life, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they don't have any time for that, you know. So back in the days, you had to get up and get the water first, and that took hours. You had to chop the wood, that took hours. You had to look after the garden, that took hours. So there was no time for developing the soul, other than experiencing yourself as an organism in the physical world. So now we have reached the level where we want to take our existence onto a higher level, and that means also farming has to change.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that those who look after the farming also have time to evolve themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that we all become part of this unified field of evolving ourselves.
Yeah.
And that means we will get an understanding of how to work with crops by using the knowledge that maybe we don't understand yet.
Yeah.
And that maybe AI is providing.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting to our relationship with food. I don't know if it's changed, or maybe changed a bit, but you know, obesity is a bigger problem now than starvation globally.
Yes.
Right. So you're more likely to die of eating too much or the wrong thing than not enough.
Yeah.
Which is pretty mind boggling. If you just think about you go to a supermarket and they make you walk through the aisles of all the processed food to get to the, you know, meat or the vegetables. It's like a ring around the center of the store. And you took away a lot of the processed saturated fats, sugars, refined wheats and things. So you end up with not a lot of food then. Mm. And a lot of that produce. In Australia, we have two supermarket chains that fix prices and take advantage of farmers. So farmers produce X amount of bananas or fruit or whatever. And those supermarket chains dictate the price of that. So there's no choice, basically, because if they can't sell it to them, they can't sell it to anybody. They'll often also look at, you know, the quality of that and say, oh, they don't look great. So destroy those. So you can't sell those to anybody. Mm. So there's an interesting effect there around our choice and around, you know, because everyone says, oh, you should just buy organic and this and that. Well, if everyone turned around trying to do that, it wouldn't necessarily work that well. That's not a silver bullet solution to that. But I do think every time we mention these big global problems, we think there's got to be one solution to that and everyone should follow it. I think that also doesn't make any sense to me. It's do what you can where you are with the choices you have available to you and do the best thing possible. And if you're in a community where you can grow something and you know, contribute to that, you should do that for sure. If you live in a city where you have a tiny apartment and you can't do that, you can maybe sprout a few things and compost, but your choices become limited. You know, you can go to an organic market or farmer's market, but that's a small fraction of the population can do that. But what I've noticed with food is that it's and maybe it's more Western culture, is that it's a thing you just shove in your face to feel full, you know, make sure your appetite's quenched, which is why a lot of people invert their diet. You know, all about this, like you don't eat breakfast. 10, 11 in the morning, you start crashing. So you have something with sugar and some extra coffee to make up for the fact you didn't eat breakfast. And lunchtime comes around, you have a sandwich. Then you have crash again in 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And then people go like, oh, I need some, you know, sugar to, you know, some cake. Mm. Yeah, someone's birthday in the office. So let's have some cake or some chocolate. And then you coast along and you feel like crap. So then at dinner time, you have a huge pile of spaghetti bolognese or pizza or whatever. So heavy fat, heavy sugar, heavy wheat. And then you have dessert and then you try and go to bed. So you see that almost inversion of that is to try and A, to do with behavior and the lack of quality of the food, but also an inverted sort of eating schedule. But then also food's become this thing where it's like you take photos of it and show people, and it's about the beauty of the thing. So I've been to restaurants where it's the plate is, you know, is bigger than my head, but the portion is, you know, about my thumb size. Mm. And it's all about the flavor profile and this and that. And I think I have a lot of respect for chefs on that level, because there's a level of genius there where there's a lot of design in food in terms of visual design. You've got a restaurant or ideas of how flavors will work together. Mm-hmm. And it's much more about the, you know, people get really, you know, foodies get really into this, the mouthfeel and the this and the umami and the four profiles. And I really enjoy, every once in a while I'll go to those places and it's an incredible experience, but I don't go there for the nutritional feeling, you know, or to feel full. It's going there for the pleasure of, you know, someone's created something and I'm consuming it the way I maybe used to go to an art gallery and like the art, even though it's been a long time since I've enjoyed art. Or I go to a car show and I look at a beautiful, you know, Ferrari Dino and I really appreciate that from that, you know, the angles and the design. And that experiencing food is the same way. But a lot of times it's become this thing where you photograph it for Instagram and you look at, like, you know, the way kitchens are run. Kitchens are very hectic, you know, almost bipolar environment sometimes where chefs are quite crazy and it's all about the show. But what I'm saying is I think that relationship with food is very splintered, where we have one, we're being told to, you know, everything we do about it is wrong and we even misunderstand where it comes from. The second is we don't even know how to eat it properly. And then the third is the quality is wrong. And then the fourth one is we look at it as something that's more something to post pictures about, not something to eat or to really draw from. But what I've noticed about your practice and what you do, but what I've followed, and you mentioned last episode, was this, it's one of those tenets, those you know, breathing and working your body and chi practices, but also the food.
Mm-hmm.
But not diet. Diet is a word to describe this thing, but not necessarily get to the nitty gritty of what it is and how.
Yeah, someone looking after my. I mean, the body is a permaculture in itself.
Well, there you go.
It's like a unified field. Yeah? So you got 12 organs, and it's not about what I want to eat. It's about what my organs want. But usually, that's why a chi practice is so crucial, because first of all, the most important thing is because we are now America and Europe, and I'd say Australia also, metabolic syndrome is 93%.
The UK possibly too,
yeah. So it's not, So we're looking at 90% of the population of the Western world like having a metabolic syndrome. That means blood sugar, that means all kind of problems. You know, I mean, so.
That's insane.
So.
That's absolutely insane.
Yeah. So where do you, like, if you give diet advice, so most people that they only last a few months or a few weeks, and then it's back to the old way, because the underlying factor is that people are stressed out to the max, don't have purpose in their life. And so when you talk about diet and food, if you don't target your emotionality first, the ability to regulate your emotions, you can't actually target correct eating.
Yeah.
Because if you are depressed and anxious, most likely you don't have appetite for the foods that actually the body needs.
Yeah.
Instead, you want the foods that is bad for you.
Yeah.
So, however, if you have your emotions regulated and your chi flows freely, that means your liver is happy, kidneys happy, spleen's happy, you have appetite for the food that the body needs.
Yeah.
So when after my morning practice, and I'm going to have my beautiful organic oats with a lot of different kinds of seeds and fruits in there, like it's a feast, that porridge I make in the morning. So it's a lot of cacao in there.
Let's talk about that. Like, what actually is in your porridge? What's actually in your porridge? Can you give us a breakdown?
30 different ingredients. So, but it's... If I finish my morning practice after my breath work, after my chi practice, after my resistant patterns, because obviously that's why I'm working with so strongly with my TIX, with my resistance training, in order to get to the point where I'm completely in tune with myself. I'm not in my way.
Yeah.
So now, because I am not in my way, I feel happy, I feel good. Therefore, my soul is coming through and my body is in the forefront, and it's all acting as a unified field, and it tells me the food I want.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now if I would sit at the table, the breakfast table, and there would be a pizza or there would be...
Here's a grain or a
fruit leaf. It wouldn't want to eat it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't want to eat it.
Yeah.
It's just no way. Back in the day when I was like 40 years ago, when I was a drug user, heavy drug user, I never was an addict. I was a very committed drug user. I made everything proper. I made sure that I do my drugs every day, every morning.
Yep. Discipline.
Yeah. Discipline. I was a disciplined drug user.
ED.
Yeah. And so obviously back in the day, I loved Fruity Loops.
You did. Actually, I was just joking. You did like Fruit Loops.
Yeah, I love Fruity Loops. And I put extra amounts of sugar on it.
adding sugar to fruit.
And peanut butter and whatever I could find.
Peanut butter on your cereal.
Yeah, whatever. You know, at least just to really make it very munchy solo.
Okay. And then milk. Or no?
Yeah, condensed milk. I like.
Okay, right. That's very, right.
Yeah, that's...
So you had Fruit Loops.
Sugar. Yeah, there's lots of sugar.
Peanut butter.
Yeah, sometimes.
And condensed milk.
Yes.
This is like you're forming like a more of a new kind of material here, like a plasma.
And sometimes I'll put a bee on top of it.
Not liquid or
solid.
Someone listening is going to come up with this. It sounds like the idea they have in...
Maybe I should go back to my old days and write a book about the food that I ate and make that as the proper drug.
But you should actually put the recipes in the book.
Yes, the recipes.
The anti-cheat.
How to really fuck up your body.
The chi vacuum cookbook. Yeah.
The foods you need to eat in order to be a good drug user.
Yes, soul-sucking foods. Yeah.
So you can stay dedicated to your path as a drug user.
This is the brainstorming department of a sugar of a company who makes cereal or processed food. They're going, this sounds like a bar. Fruit Loop bar with condensed milk and peanut butter. You could actually put this in a wrapper and eat this.
Yeah, yeah.
No breakfast, and they'll call it a breakfast bar.
maybe I unknowingly discovered it.
Breakfast ball.
Should have handed that in to Kellogg's.
Right. And no,
I'm going to copyright in it.
I'm going to try and make this recipe up, and I'll let you guys know how it goes.
I'm going to patent
Fruit Loop breakfast balls.
Yeah. So obviously, it's once your chi flows freely, which is regulated by the liver, your appetite is for the good foods, for the right foods. It's for the food that the body needs.
Yeah.
So when we talk about what is good food, I don't like the word good food because, like, if you put up on Google what is good food, you get contradictory advice.
I guess that stupid pyramid that we know is really wrong. You know, the food pyramid.
CSII or whatever it's called.
Yeah, like this is the meat, the dairy, the sugars, and everything is stacked.
It's 1950s or whatever.
It's all grains and then sugars, and it's, yeah, and I think people still use that as a reference. And we know a lot of this was orchestrated. They vilified good fats and other things and tried to, like, you know, claim that processed grains and wheat and things were better. So they basically, like, attacked things that were good for you and then promoted things that were bad. And margarine was a bit.
Yeah, when it comes down to what is good food? So I don't like the word good food.
What are tasty, though?
Good, the food that your body needs so that your organs are healthy. And if your organs are healthy, you are happy. So the better word would be happy food.
Yeah.
So we need to eat the happy foods.
Yeah.
So when you eat, like, what they call junk food, that's depression food.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we should categorize into depression food,
yeah,
anger food, and happy food.
Depression, anger, and happy.
Yeah. So the anger food is obviously the food that is just really makes you stagnant.
Yeah.
And so they're the anger food, they're the ones who, like sandwich for mid-morning,
yeah,
sandwich for lunch, and then sandwich on the desk, and then by comes 5 o'clock, you're driving home, you're full of road rage. So
it's
the anger food.
So if I've got someone in a Toyota Land Cruiser with a bull bar tailgating me,
they've been eating anger food. So they follow the anger diet.
Yeah. What if that makes you buy certain cars already? And what if you can go back to the link on the purchasing choice of a vehicle based on your diet? Because
you probably could,
right?
You could say, hang on, you follow the anger.
Yeah, I'm angry. I'm going to get a car that's good for tailgating people. So my headlights are exactly in their rearview mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
When I drive 2 inches away from their bumper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like, they've probably had a salad.
And make sure you got no up a McDilla so you can, no brakes.
You've had a prefrontal cortex removal first. You then bought your Land Cruiser with the bull bar lifted so your headlights are in the mirror and you've eaten sandwiches. Then you're in a prime position to tailgate people all the way home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's perfect.
Yeah. So that would be the anger diet. And the depression diet would be not eating at all till after lunch and then eating pizza for dinner and
yeah,
things like that. That's the depression food.
Yeah.
And then you've got the anxiety diet. And they're the diets where it's like just raw foods and salads.
Yeah, which is healthy, quote unquote. For a lot of people, correct?
That's the anxiety diet.
And raw, vegan, healthy diet.
Yeah, that means, you know, your blood sugar is completely not controlled because there's no yin in that
right,
spleen can develop and derive from. So that means your mind is constantly without a root, without a home. And that means you're in a state of hyper-alertness.
Yeah.
And so you're in a state of... For some people it works, but according to my clinical observation, very few people
can actually do it.
Probably. Can do it. Yeah, most people develop anxiety disorders from that.
But I guess at a young age you can do it, right? Because
at a young age you can do anything. Like,
yeah, we're starting.
That's
why a lot of like,
yeah,
people who are vegan influencers are pro. And I don't have any guess anything. I think you do what you think is the right thing to do. But
when I was 21, I was like, well, what's death?
But you've witnessed that burn.
Yeah.
More often than not, it goes wrong, correct? It eventually, you're burning out. Are you using your jing or you're burning up your...
Well, yeah, of course, when you're young. Yeah,
you do that
young,
anyway.
Dumb
your goal is,
come, yeah.
It's your goal to burn out your life.
Yeah, you burn it up.
Yeah.
You burn it up and then later said, oh, shit, I shouldn't have done it. But on the other hand, you learned lots from it.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're not like everyone else necessarily. You're not like,
no, all the people I've worked with.
Yeah, that's right.
They all learned not from it.
Yeah.
But it seems of people, we're just like, wow, now I got it.
That's
it's not a good idea to wake up with a six-pack of beer for breakfast and then expecting to be rationed.
But what a ride, though. What fun would that be?
Yeah, it was good for life. And back in the day...
Is that what you put when you're cereal?
Yeah. In the early 80s, when I came to Australia, I worked for the family services, and I was always nervous because, obviously, coming off the drug, then always had that, like, fundamental anxiety disorder. So I realized if I had breakfast with beer, it actually works.
So if you're out of milk, use beer instead.
Yeah.
So if you're out of condensed milk, don't worry, beer on your fruit lid.
Yeah, I drank Victoria Bitter.
Yep.
And I had a big share in Victoria Bitter back in the
VB.
VB.
That's the first.
Oh, the BB man.
Yeah. And I sidetrack. We'll get back to it in a second. The first.
I couldn't stand 4X.
All right.
It just completely puzzled me, that BS. It's just like.
I know about this. Okay.
Someone who can't write proper, can't even sign their name. How can they make good beer?
What's it called? Just call 4Xs. Yeah,
4Xs. Yeah, like that, because I couldn't identify what it was, so I just have to give it some sort of name. Yeah. So let's come up with 4Xs.
First alcohol I ever tried was VB, and this actually will explain why I didn't drink anything until I was like 20, because I was probably, I couldn't have been older than 3 or 4 when I watched my dad and his friends on the outside deck, and everyone was smoking and drinking those tall bottles they used to have. Well, they looked tall. I was really small.
Oh, yeah.
They looked quite tall ones, right? Mm-hmm. You know, smoking and drinking then.
Yeah,
everyone finished and they all left. And there was a couple of beer bottles left. And there was just one had a quarter full.
Mm.
Like, I'm going to try this beer. This is great. And I'm really rebellious, right? I grab it. And I drink the whole thing in one gulp. And someone had been using it as an ashtray.
Oh.
So not only was it warm beer, it was complete cigarette ash. So my entire mouth was coated with cigarette ash. I just spit it out. Like, luckily, I couldn't tell anyone. Because I'm like, I'm just trying to nick beer. So I couldn't actually... You know, you're a kid and you might tell everyone your trauma, you know, until you get sympathy. Couldn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And I never forget that taste. And it took days to go away. And I do recall having a real aversion to alcohol. Like, I just didn't want it. I was like really straight, way late in my life. I was a designated driver. Every time I went out with my family, I was always the one driving everyone around. But anyway, that's probably why it was a good way to get off of it. But back to your VBs, your social working, you're drinking VB in the morning first thing.
Yeah.
With breakfast or for breakfast?
Yeah. Oh, by the time I turned up at work, I had like at least 4 or 5 stubbies, or just 5 beers.
Yeah.
375 milliliter. There were the days when there was no random breath testing, so the cops didn't stop you. They didn't have this random breath testing. Like, you could drive like drunk, basically. As long as you stayed on the road straight and you didn't weave up.
It was bad when all they could do was make you touch your finger to your nose, right? That was the whole
thing. Yeah, they had to, like, have a reason for stopping you.
Ah, yeah.
That was in 1985 when the RBT, that's the road breath testing, random breath testing, started. And everyone was in uproar because all Queensland was drinking.
Yep, that doesn't surprise me.
It was like a country.
Yeah, my right to drive truck, yeah.
Everyone was like... Yeah, 5, 6, 7, 8 beers throughout the day. That was normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like normal, yeah. And that was back in the day. So like, you can't... But we didn't have antidepressants. Yeah, so that's a lot of factor.
Okay. Yeah, no. Yeah.
And no one went to the doctor and said, oh, I feel depressed. The maid said, like, here, have a beer, mate.
Yeah.
You know, so antidepressants was like, go to the bottle shop and get a carton of your beer.
Well, weirdly, and I don't condone, like, you know, being alcoholic, but it's like, quite often that would be a social thing too, you know.
Yeah.
Right? Like, have a
talk about yourself. Yeah.
Talk about stuff, get it out.
Yeah.
You know, maybe
talk about it. And someone said, come on, get it live, mate.
Right. Yeah. Have a bit of a punch up. Go home. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And then you're all right.
It worked.
Do it again the next day.
It worked. It was like, I never heard of anyone taking antidepressants.
Yeah.
I never heard of anyone taking Valium unless they were a junkie.
Tables are really turned there, haven't they?
Painkillers, yeah. It's like,
right. If you had a drunken punch up, too much for
it. Because it went a little bit too far.
Right. You got a headache, or you get some aspirin, probably had it all. You know, Nurofen, probably really good.
That was more popular.
Yeah, if you drove your Monaro into a ditch, you know, you had a bit of a headache, probably take some aspirin.
Oh, man, I had a Holden Kingswood, and it was smashed like all the time because.
That must be hard to smash, though.
Oh, they kept driving.
Yeah, but the sheet metal is like...
Yeah, because I'm trying to get around the corner and then I couldn't get back on the road.
BMW.
And I kept going, doing the corner, and then I finished off in the fence.
I think the weight distribution on those was like 90-10, so all the way was in the front. Nothing.
But look, it was better. Kept going. And if there was something wrong, he took a coating and he fixed it somehow and he kept going.
Well, I think because the amount of sheet metal on a car compared to the engine inside, it have all this protection around it.
Yeah, heaps.
So it's like the amygdala. Probably had 20 layers of protection around it. It took forever to actually get anywhere that actually caused it to get damaged.
Yeah, and when you push the brake, nothing happened.
So you could drive drunk. If you crash into something, you just go through and keep going. You don't notice.
Yeah.
Don't need a seatbelt.
Yeah.
Don't need safety glass.
So because the brakes were so bad, you made sure to brake before.
Oh, right, yeah. So just don't bother using them.
Yeah, because you realize you always knew you can't just wait for the moment when it when.
No, you got to look ahead.
Yes, you had to really just
plan,
brake,
plan ahead, start braking. Yeah, my dad used to have you had a lot of cars. We had a 54 Beetle.
Yeah,
and it didn't have any power. It was like 20 horsepower, but also it didn't have any brakes, like almost none. And right, so you take about 20 minutes to get up to full speed, but then you really had to think. Even if it couldn't handle either. There was a corner ahead or a stop sign. You go, I'm going to start braking now.
Yeah.
I'll plan for this, you know, 3-degree corner I had to go around. But Ed was behind you, like probably eating sandwiches or pissed off because you can't. But I was the most calm I've ever been. I'm like, I had no choice. I couldn't go fast. Yeah. Couldn't brake late. I couldn't have, there's no handling. So I'm like, yep, this is it. Just having a really nice cruise around, you know, but no airbags. No, I had to stop braking. You know?
It's amazing, and we all survived.
Yeah.
And now everyone's so you save it.
Modern cars are like, there's always interventions on modern cars to stop you crashing into people. So if you're not paying attention, the car will brake for you, right? This is almost a common feature now in even cheaper cars. It's like they call it advanced driver assist systems. It's like, you know, keeping in your lane. Automatic braking, gap detection.
That would have worked really well in the early 80s.
It was constant. Yeah. The car's just constantly braking. You wouldn't get anywhere. Probably wouldn't even start. I know this is unsafe. I won't even leave. But it's because people are distracted by phones. This is the claim. Distracted driving is through the roof because they reckon everyone's on their phone. But the interesting thing is that all modern cars have these big infotainment systems, they call them big screens. So there's a big screen in the middle. A lot of the instrument clusters that are the ones in front of you are screens, and a lot of the physical knobs have been removed. So it used to be you could reach over and grab the knob of the stereo or the air conditioning without looking because you've got tactile coating. You grab it and turn it. Now you actually look over physically and to touch a touchscreen button.
So you feel like you're in a home theater.
Right. But then
maybe you think you're in a computer game.
A little bit.
Maybe simulate it and feel like, oh, who's that person doing?
Yeah, it's just easier because there's less buttons inside the interior of the vehicle and they can save money. But that means you're taking your eyes off the road, which means the car then has to drive for you and brake because you're distracted by the car.
Wow. So driving becomes more and more of a problem.
Yeah, the car's distracting you and then it's driving for you because you're not paying attention.
So we all have to move into permaculture village.
Right, yeah, or drive I do a 25-year-old car with, you know, like a manual gear shifter and a deck. It's got one screen it's about 2 inches high and it tells me the temperature or when it's overheating or something. So I don't know how we got to that trade.
That's because of people follow the anger diet.
Yeah, sorry.
And the anxiety diet.
Good, I got back to it.
Yeah.
There's three diets, anger, anxiety, and depression.
Yeah, there's the anger diet, there's the depression diet, and there's the anxiety diet.
Then there's the happy diet.
And the happy diet is, the happiness diet is the diet that is, you let the body decide what you want to eat. But then the funny thing is that you actually enjoy that then. You see, this is the problem that we're facing, why we can't tackle this diet problem. It's because if your liver is stagnant, if your spleen is deficient, if your kidney is completely depleted, if your lung is obstructed, if basically the whole system is a TFU, TFU is short for totally fucked unit.
Is this it? Therapy time?
Yeah, it's
totally fine.
Yeah, I remember that. But I was working my first clinic work, and that was my first. I got the patient details, and it says a TFU type 3, and I thought, oh, TFU. So I checked everything out, and I did my work, and then if I asked our supervisor and the clinic supervisor, what does TFU mean? And all crapping. Oh, yeah, totally fucking.
That sounds very strange. Sounds like someone mechanic tells you. He's like, totally fucked in it, mate.
Yeah. Oh, this is what. what you develop in these sort of environments.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You always got a little bit of a crazy sense of humor. Like social workers got probably the sickest sense of humor.
Right, yeah.
And that keeps you alive.
Well, it's like filming the military, right?
It keeps you alive.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's just absolutely, when I work for the family service, under the, I mean, anyone who watches a movie like The Boy That Swallows Universe,
yeah,
you know, can see that's the work I did.
Yeah.
You know, I was one of those social workers who went to the homes and picked up the kids.
And, it must be traumatizing.
We got the cop outside waiting just in case something goes wrong. Most of the time it did.
Right.
So you needed sometimes two cops because you go in there, it's pretty scary. And so in that environment, it's hopeless because you don't know where to start. You don't know what to do. It's the whole situation is wherever you look, it's just, wow, how am I going to do this? So you need the sense of humor.
Worst case scenario is kids get taken away because it's dangerous for them to be there. Is that what happens? Is that why the police end up being there? Is it like...
Yeah, but many times the kid actually gets a form of love.
Yeah.
From the... Though it's dangerous, they do get some kind of love from the physical parents.
Yeah.
And when they go into foster situation, not necessarily the blood. Yeah. It's like I've seen...
Really hard, right?
I've seen... Yeah. According to my observation, I've seen more damage with foster care than actually with physical parents.
So terrible.
Yeah, yeah. And it's because the child is actually outside the blood environment where the connection is to the parent, as you know, because there's obviously something spiritually going on between the biological parents and children.
Yeah,
it's just very, very tricky subject.
Yeah.
But the fact is, like, so sense of humor obviously really helps you.
Yeah,
it's essential because in that moment your spirit comes in. Yeah?
Yeah,
if you can't laugh at yourself anymore, if you can't laugh about life anymore, well, that means your life force is low.
Yeah,
yeah, and a laughter always brings the cosmic
sure.
key in.
Yeah,
yeah? So that's obviously the first thing what we need to understand is like we can't tackle diet without actually looking at the emotions of the person first. So if someone is in a state of depression, anxiety, you can't really tackle the diet because there's still desire. You can't just, like if I get, like back in the day when I was running my drug rehab and very anxious, high depressed people, and if I would have said, look, you need my porridge, the one look at it and they may eat one bite and then boom.
No, you need... It's nice.
No way.
It's on its own, is it?
No way. No way. It's just like they go, oh, yuck. Whereas I eat my porridge, I go, oh, yummy.
Yeah.
It's like an addiction to me.
Yeah.
So like back in the day, like if I'm, you know, if you compare that to a drug experience, my porridge is like it kick ass gear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so.
So, I mean, it probably tastes the same to you as your Fruit Loops with condensed milk did.
Beyond.
But couldn't be on the spectrum of. It's kind of just like nutritional value can be more opposite, right?
Yeah.
Whereas your Fruit Loops condensed milk peanut butter is sugar, processed, damp, you know,
everything,
sugars.
Everything wrong together in a package to make it seriously wrong.
Then you got the porridge, which is the inversion, which is long chain sugars, you know.
Things it's the opposite.
Balance that, you know, yin and yang, you know, fuel, not fire. Like, it's like, yeah, it is like.
Yeah, it's a synergy because when you do like. Cooking is all about putting several ingredients together into one mix, and then you slowly cook it in order for those ingredients to act on each other as a unified field. Permaculture.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a monoculture.
Yeah.
So you're putting different seeds in, you're putting all kind of spices in, you're putting all kind of things together. Yeah.
Yeah, because you see now the, and I think it's step in the right direction, is that people talking about like superfoods that have these qualities, like antioxidant qualities or other things that, you know, often they get very like singled out. Like used to be acai, and you see ashwagandha appearing in everything now, sort of ashwagandha in hot chocolate, ashwagandha in lollies, ashwagandha in drinks. Often they're a bit isolated. And everyone talks about gut health as an important, the most important thing ever. So attack that with these things. So I think there's a progression in maybe the right way there, but it still isolates these things as singular elements that will improve everything. It's rarely cohesive.
Like antioxidant, resveratrol is regarded as one of the top antioxidants. So the resveratrol ingredient in wine is similar to a supplement, but as obviously you can't speak openly about it because it's dangerous to say that, but there's an interaction in the wine, if it's good wine,
right,
that actually makes the resveratrol, the what is the antioxidant, far more potent than if you actually have the isolated supplement.
Okay, what's good wine? Is it anti wine? What makes it good?
Wine, okay, this is a very tricky thing.
Yeah, I know.
Once again, it's a very tricky, tricky thing.
Yep.
So if your qi is low, if your kidney is deficient, if your liver is stagnant, you are in an emotional state of either anger, resistance to yourself, resentment to other people, and depressed.
Yep.
So if you now drink alcohol and you feel like a change in your mood, and you recognize that, and now you rely on that as, okay, next I'm going to do wine for that.
Yep.
Now you got a problem.
Yep.
That's the problem.
Yep.
So if your body is happy, that means your kidney is strong, your liver is free flowing, and your spleen is well, then, and you've done all your lifestyle, you've done your best you could, and then you sit there and have a glass of wine, it will do good for you.
Yeah.
Because it's part of the system.
Yeah.
It's permaculture, it's unified.
Yeah.
So alcohol is a very tricky thing because you can't isolate alcohol, not wine. You can't isolate these factors as saying, okay, it's wrong.
Yeah.
I know it's getting a lot of bad raps lately, and it's all connected to this brain research that people are leading and saying, okay, if they have one drop of alcohol, they can see what it does to the brain in terms of destructions of the neural pathway and things. And Andrew Huberman is big on that regard. I totally disagree with that guy.
Okay.
Because I follow the principle of the yogi, of the Tai Chi master, of the Taoist master. Facing the love of God, things like that do not matter.
Well, okay. I think I'm.
So it's not an isolated problem. If you, like, who are the research subjects? Who are the people they're doing the research on? What is this? I refuse to buy into this sort of propaganda of identifying this is bad food, this is good food, etc. Therefore, I'd rather have it like the happy diet, the anger diet, the anxiety diet, the depression diet.
Yeah, that's meant.
And if you follow the happy diet, then alcohol is not a problem.
Yes, unfortunately.
If you follow the anger diet, alcohol is a problem.
Yeah, for sure. Unfortunately, McDonald's has a happy meal, and I think. It's for kids, and it comes with a toy. I don't think we want to associate that with.
All right.
But it's that. That's kind of hopefully not confusing people. They're going to go and get a happy meal.
If you call it the happy diet,
You drink
glass of wine differently to if you follow the anger diet.
Yeah.
If I follow the anger diet, I need the alcohol to make me feel the best. I need to feel good.
Yeah.
If a happy diet. And I have a glass of wine in front of me. I just have a sip. I work with it.
Yeah.
I allow it to be part of me. I acknowledge the enormous intelligence in there that has been developed over 5,000 years to turn that into that brew.
Yeah.
But if I follow the anxiety diet, I can't recognize the good in it.
Yeah.
Then obviously it will become a drug and it will corrupt me.
But also it looks like if you look at when people end up drinking, as a result of those things, they've gone through a week, they're at a job they don't like, they're not eating properly, they're eating sandwiches and tailgating people, and they go out, and this usually gets later after dinner, and then they start drinking.
Yeah.
And then it rolls around in the time, and you mentioned this before, I think, around your organ times, which align with times when people get into conflict.
Yeah.
Which is like, you think about people getting to fights.
Yeah.
It's like 10 or 11.
Between 9 p.m. I worked at the Bonza in the mid-80s and late 80s, and we have seen it. I was instructed by my supervisor that start watching out around 9 o'clock, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. It is like that's when you could tell the separation's happening. And then I said, you can say pretty much like at 11 o'clock, the first punches will start.
Yeah.
And that's gallbladder. And you can pretty much say at 1 o'clock, it's going to go for it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's full on. That's liver time.
Yeah. But then it's like you track that back and now it's caused by alcohol and toxic meal,
you
know, masculinity or something, right? That's the simple solution.
Yeah, if you drink excessive like that, you most likely either follow the anger diet or you follow the anxiety diet, the depression diet.
Started way before 11 p.m.
Yeah, it started like several years before.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and you just compounded to the point where
you... It's like if you follow the happy diet, first of all, you wouldn't be at a nightclub at midnight.
Probably not.
Yeah. You would be asleep. you would party with your spirit guides in the world.
It's always like, you know, look at the Bubishi, the Bible of Karate, or the 12 guiding principles of martial arts. And when they say about fighting, is the first step is like, don't be there.
Yeah.
The best way is to not be in a situation you're going to be in a fight.
Yeah.
It's like, avoid. It's never like, oh, what's the right block in the parry? It's like, don't even be, just be somewhere else.
Yeah. If your life sucks, then you want to be up all night.
Yeah.
You know?
But you're probably then looking.
But if your day is just fulfilling because you recognize your soul, now your soul wants to go home at 9 p.m.
Yeah.
He wants to go to the astral world where it came from, and he wants to meet its teacher, and he wants to be with the soul family.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be with physical people. Yeah. It had enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've done your part during the day, and then comes 9 o'clock and the soul said, off you go.
That's a really good way to leave to leave a party. It's like, my soul is done with this, has to go home. I gotta take my soul home.
My soul tells me to, you know. Yeah, it's true.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's just like it's a violation to your soul if you stay up after nine.
Right.
Yeah. It's all about inclusiveness. Yeah. Mm. So if you stay up after nine, you actually exclude your soul. And that's actually not a good
inclusiveness, is it? So that's a meta violation.
Yeah. Yeah. You separate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're violating the soul rights.
The soul will be offended. Yeah. So you actually. You're actually really doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And because you're supposed to be solid, like, look, mate, it's my turn now. I need to go home.
Yeah.
I want to be home. I had enough of this.
Yeah.
I just want to be around like-minded. I want to be in the astral world where everything's happy and rosy and pinky.
Yeah, you get that before 9 a.m. for sure. That's like,
who the most?
7, 8, like, let's get out of here.
You know? Yes. And so then, bang, it goes. And then your body's just off.
Yeah.
And then it is return. And then, you're up at 5 o'clock and you get into the breathing work, you go into the chi work, and now you're facing all that what needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
You detox your body.
And if you detox your body, you're probably not going to want to retox it right away with Fruit Loops.
If you detox your body, like, it's just, the chi cycle is so smart.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, start the day with detox. Once you have detox, like attracts like. Once your body's clean and cleared out, you only will have cravings for clean food.
Yeah.
You automatically will follow the happy diet without you actually focusing.
Yeah, and then becomes self-regulating, which is permaculture, right? It actually...
Yes.
It doesn't need to be isolated.
It's a happy body.
Yeah.
The body, all the organs are happy with each other because they know what they want. And you haven't violated them.
Yeah.
You don't tell the liver... Don't do this. You don't tell the small intestine, do this. You don't tell the kidney, do this. You have allowed the bodies to do their own stuff.
Yeah.
Like what we see here, one tree grows its way, another tree grows somewhere else. I have no input over it.
Yeah.
As a result of that is they just act on each other. And the fruit that we get here, the vegetables that we get here, it's like the pumpkin is just, it's a different world here.
Yeah.
It's alive. I picked up the pumpkin a couple of days ago. It was so big. It just was like bigger than the table.
Yeah.
So we got now pumpkin for at least 6 months.
Yeah.
With one pumpkin.
Yeah.
So we got food. Basically, we got soup for 6 months for one pumpkin.
I mean, I know that sounds exciting for you. Some people are going to go, woof.
They're just like, wait, I got 6 months supply of soup and I'm in bed before 9.
And a lot of people are probably like, what the fuck is he on about? And they get up at 4 a.m. and work out for 3 hours and have porridge. But I understand completely because I felt it.
Yeah.
Not to level you have, but I know what I learned is that off when it's off.
Yeah.
If I, and my porridge has probably got a third of the ingredients yours does, but I'm heading towards that. But if I don't have it, it's very, very noticeable.
You know,
if I go out today, I'll try something different. And same thing when I step off and have something that's processed or sugar, it's a very instant feeling. So I don't need to think too hard about not doing it because I know the results. It's a very, it's a project. It's for me, it's a process of isolation or not isolation. There's an equation there.
But, yeah.
If you have a lot of not bad foods, but other foods or all those things, they start to go together. You don't really notice what's doing anything anymore. So once you start to, if you amend that and go the other way.
That's why the detox is so essential, because you've got to start the day with detox. So breath work, chi work, resistant trainings.
Yeah.
So that means everything's cleared out.
Yeah.
So then you give, automatically you've got the desire for the grounding food.
Yeah.
Which is spleen time. And automatically that then builds the chi and the blood. And then automatically at lunchtime, it's small intestine time, it will separate and isolate what is good for you.
Yeah.
So let the body decide.
Yeah.
We just need to live in a certain way. It's just like the intelligence underlying creation is beyond our comprehension. We don't understand what goes on. All these neuroscientists and all these quantum physicists, you know, the more they know, the lesser they know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fact. Like start Tai Chi, in the beginning you know it all, and then 10 years later you know nothing.
I know less now than I did 10 years ago.
Yeah. And it's the same thing with science. You know, the more you get into, the lesser you know.
Yep.
The more you book yourself down into things in order to somehow get an understanding. And so it's just like with metabolic syndrome, it's such a big problem now. So we understand that belly fat is the biggest problem. Belly fat is the biggest problem because that's the fat you don't want, because it actually, what it does, it's the body gets bigger, but your organs actually get shrunken in more and more and more and compress on your organs. And if you compress on your organs, you know, that's when the problem begins.
Yep.
And belly fat is the biggest problem. By the way, I did a YouTube about how to lose belly fat and why. So check it out.
That latest one?
Yeah. So check it out, how to lose belly fat and why, because in there I'm going to talk in depth about what belly fat is and why it's so important to, and what exercises to use and what lifestyle.
And that'll be obviously, because it's you're doing a holistic, I don't know if you use word, but it's cohesive. It's not isolating fat.
No,
and
I don't focus on diet.
A lot of meal plans.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. No. It's just, diets are useless. And so I focus on yin and yang.
Yeah.
It is like a diet. It's like if diets would work, we would have resolved the problem, but instead we got the biggest diet problem of all.
Well, more obesity, more allergies, more intolerances.
We got the biggest dietary problem.
No, more bad.
And all I see is confusion.
Yeah.
It's every client I get is confused.
Yeah, because I've gone down the all meat diet.
Oh, then I go keto, then I go vegan, then I go breatharian, then I go only meat. And
what was that? Breatharian,
yeah. Was that breatharian, they're the ones who don't eat at all. I met a couple and I went for lunch with them. It's really...
What do they have?
They don't eat.
Yeah, but...
I ate.
But how long does that last before you die?
Those breatharians were apparently a whole year without eating. They looked a bit weird and they felt a bit weird and the skin didn't look healthy.
But just no food?
No, they understand how to utilize it from within. So there's some...
Usually if you're doing that, aren't you in a cave meditating or something?
It was more in the 90s when you heard about this sort of breatharians. You don't hear much about them anymore.
That's because they're all dead?
I think they'll stop breathing.
But I figure that's a practice that is, you're probably in another level at that point where you...
How do you want to go on a diet as a breatharian? Say maybe I'm going to restrict my breath.
But then it's like, what air? Because you need the right quality of air, right?
Yeah, I'm an organic breatharian.
Yeah, this is like the plot to the movie Spaceballs, which was a spoof on Star Wars.
What about a keto breatharian?
How's that work?
Yeah, I have no one.
Yeah, the plot to Spaceballs, the sci-fi movie, was they had to invade the other planet to steal their air because they were out of oxygen. Yeah. One of the guys was he had bottled air. It was called Perry air. Yeah, so he was opening a bottle of Perry air and breathing it in. So maybe it's your breath air and you breathe Perry air. like snooty, fancy bottled air.
It's true. These sort of things, there's all kind of shit out there now.
Yeah.
But it's confusing. And the idea is not to think about it. That's what always, Bruce Lee, feel, don't think. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in order to get to that understanding that the body guides us to that awareness, we need to really live a lifestyle that will guide us. And we've got to, first of all, get out of our way. That's crucial.
Yeah.
And then treat all the resistant patterns. So because if you wake up and you're not doing the detox on yourself and you're in your way, you have no chance to make sense out of life. That's how it is.
Yeah.
It's just getting up and then getting to breath work and chi work. It's the only way to make sense of life.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this physical world is going to be war.
Yep.
Yeah. So I can't see how people can live without, first of all, consulting their source first.
Yeah.
Every morning, I need to consult the source.
Yep.
I need to consult my spirit first. If I would wake up and go straight to the physical, oh my God, that would be a...
Yeah, well, if you...
That would be a nightmare.
Yeah, you know, you look at it from like a coding standpoint, and there's a visual simulator and then there's a code behind it. And you can't solve the problem in the visual simulator. You have to look at the code. So if something's broken, you don't fix the front end, you look at the inside, the back end.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might fix a line of code. It's presenting itself as, you know, again, this is like a user interface. So we've got the front and the back. But you're talking about engaging with the source first before getting distracted by the screens and the icons and the user interface. So you need the source code is, you know, they always say everyone's got to learn to code. I think that's fucking stupid. Because that's like saying everyone needs to learn how to, you know, I don't know, engineer bridges or something. But it is interesting, the analogy, though, just to understand the back end of something, what's actually causing those things. Because if you only deal with it in the top end, in the surface level, user interface, you're not going to solve anything. You're just going to end up in a circle. So,
yeah, we have to just like, it's a mad world out there. And we can't make sense of it by looking at outside. We have to, by going inside, it makes sense. Yep. And that's where like, and follow the happy diet.
Happy diet. Not happy meal. Not McDonald's. Happy diet. Not a diet. No. Happy food.
Happy diet always leads to a happy ending.
What better way to end than a happy ending? Till next time.
Yep.